And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel, they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamp to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation, and it shall be a statute forever in your generation. The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its independent affiliated stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, the second in a series entitled The Writer and His Time, was written by Mark Siegel and is called Yahweh. His full name was Isaac Labish Peretz, but we who knew him in Warsaw called him Yao, a combination of the initials of his Jewish name, Yitzhok Labish. I want to tell you about Yao the man, not Peretz the writer. You see, Peretz was a literary genius, but Yao was the beating heart of Poland's Jewry. He was born in Zamość, the little Paris of Poland. Now, it's enough of a miracle when any child is born, isn't it? But Yao, he was a prodigy from the start. He was a Hebrew scholar at the age of 3. At 6, he could read and interpret the Talmud like an old man. At 9, he was fluent in 4 languages. And by the time he was 12, he was driving his mother to distraction.
Reb Moshe, have you seen my son?
What? He's run away again?
Again, and only an hour before time to light the candles for the Sabbath.
When you find him, punish him. That's what he needs.
He's too bright to punish. When we punish him, he tells us we're punishing ourselves. And he's right. Michael,
no?
A moment, please. Michael. Michael, have you seen Yitzhak Labush?
No, Rebecca. But I can tell you where he is.
Why waste your time and mine quickly? Where is he?
By the river.
The river?
Not in the river, near the river. You'll find him lying in the meadow.
What's he doing there?
What should he be doing? He's lying in the grass, naturally, listening to the angels who stand beside each blade.
And what are the angels saying that he can hear it?
The angels are saying to each blade of grass, and to your son, too, grow, grow.
He was a dreamy child, growing too rapidly, and his soul mirrored the many conflicts of his time. He rebelled against the rigid atmosphere of his home. But having discarded the old, he was uncertain as to what was the new. In his teens, he suffered as only an adolescent can suffer. He would lie awake in bed, ridden by his doubts and fears. And when his terror grew too great, he would leap from bed, twist open the window, and dart out into the square.
Who is it? Who's there?
Let me in, Michael.
Boy, what are you doing here at this time of night?
I couldn't sleep, Michael. I was afraid.
Oh, come in, then. I'll get you a cup of tea.
I didn't come here for tea.
Then for what?
Because I'm afraid, Michael. Because I don't know anymore what to believe.
In these times, Yitzhak, who knows what to believe?
Everyone. Everyone has something to believe. Reb Moshe in the House of Study believes if you study the Talmud day after day and have a long face and go to the synagogue 3 times a day, you fulfilled your duty before God. Reb Shlomo believes you must not only be pious, but that you must dance and sing. They're both so sure.
And which one is right, Yitzhak? Reb Moshe or Reb Shlomo?
Maybe they're both wrong. Michael, do you believe in God?
May heaven forgive you. What a question. Of course I believe in God.
Does God control the world?
Of course he controls the world.
Did I ask to be born? When I leave the world, will it be because I want to go?
No, son. God will decide.
He decides everything.
No, he decides some things.
How do you know which things God decides?
No one can answer that precisely, Yitzhak.
Why does he make people suffer?
Yitzhak, you can't inquire into the ways of God.
Why can't you inquire into the ways of God, Michael? In Warsaw, do they inquire into the ways of God?
Well, there are people who try, but I don't think they'll succeed.
Michael, other people, people who don't live in the ghetto, what do they believe?
I think they struggle with the same problems.
If I knew what they thought. If I could read their books.
Yes. Then?
Then maybe I could find the answers.
No, Yitzhak. Listen to me. I, too, have searched for the answers, and now I am old. Study, learn, search for knowledge. But as you search, remember, learning alone will not answer the questions inside you. Man has a brain, but man was created also with a heart. A man cannot live without a heart.
Michael the Fiddler was a man of many parts. And when he died, he left a legacy to Jarl. And that legacy was a rusty key to an attic library of books from the world beyond the ghetto. Jarl's knowledge of world history and literature, of science and philosophy grew. Yet he did not always follow the cult of clear reason. One day, Jarl and a friend were at a fair in Leshnet. To escape the heat, they walked into a cool wine shop.
Yes, gentlemen. What will you drink?
A glass of wine, please. And you, Nachum?
The same.
In a moment.
A fine-looking girl.
Parrots, you've been single too long.
No. She has a soul. You can see it in her eyes.
You're a law student. An observation like that wouldn't stand up in court, and you know it.
Happily, Nachum, this is no court of law.
Your wine, gentlemen.
Will you join us, Miss...
Ringelheim. No, thank you. I don't drink.
Never?
Only on special occasions. At celebrations.
Well, this is a celebration. Gutela. You did say your name was Gutela, didn't you?
I said my name was Ringelheim.
Just Ringelheim. Miss Nothing Ringelheim?
No. Helena. Miss Helena Ringelheim.
Well, have a drink with us, Helena Ringelheim.
Stop bothering the girl parrots. You just heard her say she drinks only on special occasions.
This is a special occasion, Nachum. I am about to ask Miss Helena Ringelheim to become my wife.
He and Helena were married 4 days later. It was a good marriage. He took his bride back to Samos, paid off his debts, and began to practice law. Day by day, his practice grew. In the evenings, he played chess with Nachum.
There. That's that.
That's what?
The game, Nachum.
I don't see it.
Here. If you take the knight, I take your queen.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't take the knight, I move to king, bishop four, and you're checkmated.
On the one hand, I lose. On the other hand, I lose. Is that it?
If you work at it, to win is easy, Nachum.
You should know, parrots. You always do.
At chess.
And in the law courts?
Yes. In the law courts, too.
Then where do you lose?
Inside, Nachum. When I was a boy here in Zamosh, Nachum, there was a wonderful old man who was my friend. Once he said to me, a man cannot live without a heart. Nachum, I'm 35 years old and I'm living without a heart.
You're not being fair to yourself. You're the...
But all around us there is injustice, persecution, and I sit here and play chess.
Every time you stand up in court, you resist injustice.
Yes, as an individual. But, Nachum, a man isn't a free dot in the universe. He's one ringlet of a net. And the net is his generation and his people. If I struggle, it's a lonely struggle.
Lonely? You have Helena. You have your friends, your home.
Nachum, I will ask you a riddle. If I have my home, if I really have my home, how is it that I feel homesick?
In 1887, acting on an anonymous complaint against Isaac Labish Peretz, that he had made anti-Russian statements, the Minister of Justice of the government of His Imperial Majesty the Tsar ruled that Jarl should be denied the right to practice law. The case was appealed in St. Petersburg.
Your Excellency, in the case of my colleague, I.L. Peretz, may I ask if there is any act in his record as a lawyer for which his license has been revoked?
Advocat, this is not a cross-examination. If you have anything to say in behalf of this Peretz, say it and be done.
Yes, Your Excellency. For 10 years, he has pursued the practice of law. His ethics are beyond question. His performance is one of great ability.
You say his conduct has been good?
Exemplary.
And he is an able attorney?
Among the ablest.
So much the better then, Advocat. Russia will then have One able lawyer less.
The Minister of Justice could not have known that his decision would give life to a new movement, but he was guiding a misdirected genius into a channel which would bring heart and courage to all the Jews of Poland. Jan and Helena came to Warsaw, the center of Jewish intellectual life. It was there that he began to write seriously. I liked him from the start and admired his work. We disagreed only on one point.
Write in Yiddish, Yaakov? In jargon? Never.
Yiddish is the language our people understand.
You prefer it good, but not for me. I write in Hebrew. Yiddish is impossible for artistic purposes.
There are purposes higher than purely artistic purposes.
Such as?
Such as those you've begun to recognize. Such as the education of 3 million Jews in Poland.
I believe in education, but I will continue to write in Hebrew.
Peretz, how can you be so brilliant and so stubborn?
You call it stubbornness, Yaakov. I call it willpower.
The result is the same. You're writing in a vacuum.
That's not true. I'm writing of the most urgent problems of our people. The problems that all
as
of us...
As an intellectual, Peretz. You write about the people's problems, but you don't really feel them. Until you can come face to face with these problems, you will meander through our time, offering nothing, solving nothing.
Meander? I don't understand.
You're neither one thing or another. You satirize tradition and reject modernism as lifeless. You believe the Jews of Poland have special problems, but you concern yourself with the problems of the Polish people. You pay lip service to education, but you write in a language only intellectuals understand.
In short, Yaakov, I'm an impossible mixture.
Well, I wouldn't put it that strongly.
It's all right, Yaakov. I've been an impossible mixture for 35 years. But I begin to think it was meant to be that way, that out of the extremes there may come a middle ground, a path down which I can walk with acceptance and with pride. Perhaps there will be others who will follow.
In 1888, Yal needed a job badly. I helped him get one as a traveling statistician on an expedition to determine the condition of Poland's Jews. In the little provincial towns, he was not greeted with immediate trust.
Good morning, friend.
Good morning.
What is your name, friend?
Levy.
And your last name?
Why do you want to know?
I'm gathering statistics.
Statistics? We've heard that before. We know what that means.
What does it mean?
More taxes. That's what it means.
No. Not these statistics. I'm helping some people who want to show how poor the Jews are, how hard it is for a Jew in Poland to get along.
My friend, take my word for it. To prove that, you don't need statistics.
Your name?
Chaim.
And your business, Chaim?
What business?
What do you live on?
One just lives.
On what?
I do what they let me do. I run errands. I carry coal.
You have no trade.
What good is a trade if you're not allowed to practice it? Look, I'll answer all your questions at once and you can go back to Warsaw. Neither I nor any one of the Jews in this village has any money. Therefore, we live as God wills and have lived so all our lives. And if there's a child to be married, we have a wedding. And dance in the mud.
Is your mother here?
There, on the bed.
It's cold. Why don't you light a fire?
There's been no fire, not chimney for a month.
Have you eaten today?
Yes, potato peelings.
Potato peelings. Nothing else?
And one onion.
Look, I have a few coppers in my pocket. Can I get you something?
Yes, thank you.
What do you want?
Please, sir. May you have health and strength. Could I have another onion?
Jacob, what good are the statistics?
Perhaps they're no good, yeah.
Can they answer the question, how many empty stomachs, how many people starving for a crust of dry bread?
You've seen it. Now you know.
Yes, I know. I shut my eyes and I see them. Neglected children, babies in cradles screaming their throats out. Sick people, unattended. Yaakov, something must be done.
May we have the strength to do it.
What I've seen, that alone will give me the strength.
I don't understand, Yao. You've come back with a report of poverty and starvation.
Those are external conditions. And yet the people survive scorn and hunger and brutality. Why? Because they have an inner light. Behind the sad faces, there is a shining faith. Their faith is the reservoir from which we shall draw our strength.
But, Yal, I've known that. I've always known it.
It's more than that we should draw strength from them. We must also help them realize how powerful their faith is, how the strength which lies within them can better their conditions.
Oh, that's not so easy.
No, not easy. And yet, for the first time in my life, I know what I must do. If I fail, I will at least fail as a servant of my people, not in mere isolation. Oh, and Jacob, I owe you an apology.
An apology? For what?
For not realizing that to reach our people, I must write in the language they understand. From this day on, I do not confine myself to Hebrew. I will write also in Yiddish. I shall make the language of captivity speak in the cause of liberty.
He was 37 when he made his debut in Yiddish. So that he could go on writing, he found a job with the Gemeinde, the Warsaw Jewish community. He became clerk of the mortuary department. 6 days a week from 9 to 3, he recorded the deaths of his people. But in the afternoons and through the nights, his pen spoke life and renaissance. It also spoke justice and freedom, ideals not popular with the Russian censor.
Now look here, Peretz. I've been lenient with you up to now.
Yes, Your Honor.
But I must warn you, you're beginning to anger, not to annoy me.
What have I done?
Well, these last stories, these stories about your Elijah, your Jewish prophet. Nothing but propaganda.
Your Honor, those stories are hundreds of years old. I'm only retelling them.
Telling or retelling? Can't go on glorifying the poor and denouncing the wealthy.
Wealth is only a pledge entrusted to mortals, Your Honor. It can be retained forever if proper use is made of it.
That is just the kind of statement I'm talking about. I warn you, Peretz. Mind your commas and your periods.
Yes, Your Honor.
And Peretz, no more of these series of printed dots behind which you conceal your thoughts. Your meaning does not escape me.
Your Honor, you flatter me.
Flatter you? How?
When people understand what I write, I'm pleased. But when they understand even what I don't write, Your Honor, I must admit it, then I'm flattered.
Whether it was what Yal wrote or didn't write, he was understood. In his little Hasidic tales and in his poems and essays, 3 million Polish Jews found a mirror of their faith. His reputation grew. And as the years passed, his home on Saglana Street became a kind of university for a whole new generation of younger writers. That's what I'm trying to say.
But, Yal, how can you do it? How can you separate the plight of the Jewish people from that of the Polish masses?
You can't.
Well, then your hope is with the partisans of reform.
They are my hope, Schleimer, yes, but they are also my fear.
Well, why should you fear them?
When the oppressed are victorious, they sometimes turn into oppressors. And every oppressor sins against the human spirit.
Mm. Yal, the real answer to our problems isn't the answer in Palestine.
I feel the pull of Zion. But even if Zion is reborn, millions of Jews will continue to live among other peoples. These Jews must be citizens of the lands of their domicile. They must participate in the life of the people in whose midst they remain.
Yal, I have still another question.
Ask it, Shlomo.
Don't you think Yiddish should be the Jewish national tongue?
No, I do not. I choose to write in Yiddish because right now 3 million Jews understand no other language. But abandonment of Hebrew would be like severing the roots of the tree to which they belong.
Yal, many of us seek a common...
I don't know quite how to explain it. It wasn't only writers and intellectuals who came to put their faith in Yal.
Somehow, all of Poland's Jews came to feel that this one man, this little man with the big head and the soft, sad eyes, had faced all their problems and come up with the answers born of a deep faith in his own Jewishness and in theirs. On April 3rd, 1915, He went to his office in the Gemeinde. He had been working, overworking in behalf of Jewish refugees displaced by the World War. He had promised to write a poem to aid the children of a refugee orphan asylum. He sat down at his desk and began to write.
Softly, softly, about to give thanksgiving, he...
We found him, a smile on his face, his pen in hand. I told you I would tell you about Yal the man, not Peretz the writer. It was the funeral of Yal the man that 150,000 Jews of Warsaw attended. From noon to 7 o'clock at night, they followed Yal through the streets. All kinds of Jews from all walks of life, scholars, dreamers, Talmudists, aged men, children, simple artisans, Zionists, vagabonds, men of affairs, and the paupers of the street. They followed him with wet eyes and with painful hearts. He was their pleader and defender. He was the poet of the Jewish soul and the dreamer of a time of justice still to come. Today, everybody must plow, sow, and cultivate his own patch of earth. Although, or rather because, we hope for a morrow in which there will be a common granary for mankind. The time will come. The time must come. The thunderstorms will pass away, and the earth will give us its strength. The heavens, their warmth and light.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 25 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York, New York, 10027. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Dr. Judah Nadish, rabbi of the Park Avenue Synagogue of New York City. Dr. Nadish.
Yal Peretz was moved by the shining faith behind the sad faces of the Jews in Russian Poland. That faith, he said, enabled them to survive scorn and hunger and brutality. It was a threefold faith, faith in God, and therefore the universe was one of order and reason. Hence, despite poverty and oppression, there was no despair. It was also faith in the Jewish people, as a people covenanted with God. Therefore, it could not be altogether cut off, for it was destined to play out its role in human history, a principal arena to be the land of Israel, to which the Jews would someday return. It was, too, faith in the Torah, whose teachings were associated with the divine. Since what they saw about them was the antithesis of what the Torah taught, they knew that the current experiences would be short-lived. Peretz's times were, for the masses of Jews of Eastern Europe, the breakup of the Middle Ages. The faith of Jews that Peretz admired drove them into diverse directions, into the ranks of revolutionaries, reformers, and Zionists. The reformers made significant contributions to the advancement of the democratic system in the lands of their loyalty in Western Europe and America. The most identifiable result of that period of the Haskalah, of the Enlightenment, in which Peretz was so luminous a figure, was idealistic Jewish nationalism, or Zionism. That movement developed the drive, creativity, and sacrifice which produced the State of Israel not quite 20 years ago. Many do not understand that the attachment of Jews to the land of Israel, however, is not just a modern phenomenon. The love of Israel, the longing for it, are part of Judaism from the beginning, from the days of Abraham. The land of Israel is bound up with the destiny of the Jewish people as a people covenanted with God, an arena for the fulfillment of Jewish history and purpose. It is understandable, therefore, that when the relationship between the Jews living in Israel and the land of Israel is threatened, or indeed the very annihilation of those Jews is proposed, that Jews the world over should rise to extend a helping hand. So too do men of goodwill of other faiths who understand the place of Israel in Judaism and in the heart of the Jew stand up for Israel's cause. May such understanding grow.
Thank you, Dr. Nabish. Our eternal light drama today, Yal, written by Mark Siegel, is the second in a series entitled The Writer and His Times. Cantor Robert H. Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Featured today was Leon Janney as Peretz. Others in the cast were Martha Greenhouse, Albert M. Ottenheimer, Edgar Staley, Ellen Howard, Diana Barth, William Mason, Stefan Schnabel, Rosa Gottlieb, and Clifford Carpenter. Heard as the narrator, Jacob, was Joe DeSantis. We invite you to join us next week for the third in this series, Man of Athens, by Joseph Mindel. This is Jerry Damon. The Eternal Light is directed by Kenneth McGregor and presented weekly under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America.
This is the NBC Radio Network.